I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our weekly Penguins chat. Andrew Destin coming to you here with Matt Wenzel, who's on the road with the team. We're recording this Monday morning ahead of the Penguins game against the Arizona Coyotes in Tempe at that glorious Mullet Arena that you got to spend some time at yesterday as well as again tonight. But before we get into any of that, I want to remind you, as always, that this podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. Again, that's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Well, Matt, there's a lot to get into here. I know we're going to touch on first about the game on Saturday against the Vegas Golden Knights, which drew shades of the 2022-23 campaign. But just want to ask you off the top of the top here, thoughts on Mullet Arena, getting to check that place out yesterday?
Well, I'm curious to see what it's like for an NHL game, but it's a pretty sweet college venue. I mean, nice little rink there. Pens had a brief practice, only like a half hour. This point in the season, they were not practicing for too long. So, yeah, I'm curious to see the game and just how the fans are going to be there. I mean, what's it see, like 5,000, 6,000, somewhere in there? So,
yeah.
Definitely not a sustainable home for the Coyotes, but, you know, could be fun for us.
Yeah, it's an interesting setup there with the press. You're sitting on, like, bar stool seating, I think it was last year, where you're, like, kind of ingrained right there with the, you know, just the normal fans. So it's an experience. You won't forget it. I'll say that much.
Great. Why didn't I give you this trip? Oh, Vegas. That's why I got to spend 3 days in Vegas.
Well, you got to spend the 3 days in Vegas. Penguins did too. Had an off day even in there. I know you're up to a lot of fun.
You could argue that two off days, but
yeah. Well, let's get into that then. Talk me through the Vegas trip, and I guess that whatever that was on Saturday night, I believe it was, with the Pens basically saying, hey, we're going to show you we can play last year's game, get a lead the first two periods and blow it in the third, right?
Yeah, I mean, they actually played a pretty good first two periods against a Vegas team that was missing some key players. But, you know, obviously they're still a good team, a lot of confidence. And then they just completely fell apart in the third period. I like how Ryan Graves described it because, I mean, we tend to just kind of break down the goals. And, you know, he was basically saying, like, you know, you can't, like, he was talking about how they completely lost track of their game, and it might not show up in the goals themselves, but more so just the fact that they were completely under siege, under duress the entire period. I mean, the numbers from SportLogic said it was, like, overwhelming in terms of chances, turnover chances, zone time, things like that for Vegas. And, you know, a couple of goals themselves were kind of weird goals or soft goals, like the winning goal was from shot from, you know, the Bellagio, and it got past Tristan Jarry's blocker. So kind of a weird game in that regard where they were good. And then in the third period, they just, you know, they didn't have it. They ran out of gas and Vegas overtook them.
You mean to tell me there was a game winning goal over Tristan Jarry's blocker? That sounds like
it's becoming a problem, huh? I mean, it wasn't as bad. Well, I don't know. The one against Carolina was pretty bad in overtime, which is, you know, he played so well to get to that point and then to allow, you know, a goal that, you know, metrics say had a 1 in 25 chance of going in. So, yeah, that's been a problem for him really over the last month, his blocker.
Yeah, certainly.
Off the rush, it's like, I don't know, he's just not finding his net, I guess.
Right. It's such an interesting thing. It's like, just to dovetail on that convo briefly, like, there, you mentioned the Carolina game. A lot of these moments, they feel like they're in overtime, which, you know, that heightens the importance of off the rush, just given the nature of it. But that's just something that, for lack of better phrasing, I guess just Tristan really hasn't looked comfortable in any scenario off the rush, really, at least from my standpoint. Has that kind of been your observation too?
I mean, he's good in some regards. Like, we have the numbers from SportLogic, at least as of a couple weeks ago. I mean, he wasn't as good as Alex Nedeljkovic, who was one of the league's best goalies against the rush this year. But Tristan is still pretty good on 2-on-1s, which is something I wrote about last year. He's one of the league's better goalies at that. And the breakaways, he had not been beaten very often, but it was an alarming amount of shots that just missed the net. So it's hard to kind of divvy up whether he deserves credit for those and whatnot. But yeah, it's never going to look pretty with him. I mean, he's not the most natural mover. So I think that's part of it as well. It's like, just, I mean, Tristan just flat out doesn't ever really look truly comfortable. It's just kind of the way his play style. He's just not the most graceful goalie.
Yeah. Certainly something that's been, you know, an observation, no question about it. But that's certainly one topic. But as you can see below me, there's another one that I know you and I both want to get into here, just given the nature of the way the Penguins' schedule has kind of shaken up here with playing two games here on this road trip, but a lot of downtime. On one of those downtime days, I believe that was on Wednesday, when Kyle Dubas does his bi-monthly or bi-weekly, however you want to phrase it, show with our good pal Josh Getzoff, talked a little bit about Jake Guentzel. I know you wrote about that. That's something that we're going to talk a little bit about here. Just the comments that Kyle Dubas had, pretty defining stuff, saying how I guess no teams have really contacted the Penguins in regards to Guentzel, as seems to be the case, at least from what Dubas is saying.
Or at least he hasn't engaged people if they have called. It makes sense. I mean, they did so many win now moves this summer to try to get back to the playoffs and go on a run. I mean, you know, they traded a first and a second for Erik Karlsson and took on his contract, which could be difficult to move going forward. The Ryan Graves and Tristan Jarry signings, trading a third round pick for Riley Smith. This team is I wouldn't say all in on winning now, but they've certainly put a lot of chips into the pot, to use a Vegas analogy. I did that too. It didn't go as well for me. Obviously the Penguins are going to see this through, go as long as they can to see if this team can come together and be what they thought it might be before the season. So, yeah, it makes no sense for them to engage, you know, in trade talks until they absolutely have to. So the thing that Dubas said I think was most newsworthy was just that, you know, they could talk during the All-Star break. Like, he plans at some point to have a conversation with Ben Hankinson's Guentzel's agent to talk about the parameters of a deal. And yeah, so there's a lot at stake for the Penguins. If they want, the players want Jake to stick around, they should keep winning games so that they're still in the hunt. And I do think there will be. I think this could end up becoming a moot conversation. I don't see the Penguins, you know, dropping out of striking distance of a playoff spot over the next month. And it would be pretty surprising at that point if the Penguins were in it, if they were to just sell off Jake Guentzel. Maybe there's like a hockey trade they could do is a different story. If they said, okay, like, we're going to trade Jake for, you know, one or two different players with term that we think could fortify the core and make us a different but still good team. But selling him for a pick or a prospect, I think that would be very surprising. And it would also be, a complete admission that, you know, an acknowledgement that Dubas miscalculated last summer with all his moves by making all these win now moves. If he turned around and said, okay, time to rebuild 6 months later.
Right. And just with all those moves, like you mentioned, I mean, it was no secret, right? When Ron Hextall and Brian Parker running the show here, when FSG first brought them aboard, right, there was kind of that two timelines approach, however you want to describe it, of they want to build toward the future, but also remain competitive in the present. It seems like the current direction under Dubas, certainly he's said similar things, but there's been much more of an emphasis, I'd like to think, on that present. With Jake in mind, just given some of those things you're mentioning about, you know, what it would take, whether it be an admission of kind of defeat regarding this season, is there any scenario, and I guess we'll get into various trade options here and what the Penguins' options are, but is there any scenario you envision where, you know, you mentioned a pick and a prospect, but is there any chance where it's a pick and two prospects or two picks and a prospect? What would it take in that kind of a trade, do you think, for it to be too much for the Penguins to turn down? Or is that just not an option entirely, you think?
I mean, there's just so much at stake for this team. If you signal that you're going into a rebuild, what does that say to Sidney Crosby? I mean, Sidney Crosby at 36 is still a top 10 player in the league. He's playing outstanding. He's a competitive guy. I mean, he understands the business of the game, but he wants to win another cup. And how does trading Jake Guentzel away for picks or prospects or whatever it is, even if it's 10 first-round picks, how does that help Sidney Crosby win the cup. And Sid's going to be eligible to sign an extension this summer. You know, obviously the Penguins and Fenway Sports Group want him to come back. So, yeah, I mean, if they basically say, okay, like we're trading, you know, we're pulling the plug on the season and we're retooling, you know, that's potentially set off a lot of dominoes. And I just don't know that the Penguins and especially ownership, who has, you know, all the financial skin in the game, is going to want to just say goodbye to Sidney Crosby and pivot into a rebuild. So there's so much at stake beyond just like, oh, yeah, it makes sense for them to get some like some younger prospects and players. I mean, you know, the next, you know, what they decide to do with Jake Guentzel is going to impact the next 3 to 5 years of Penguins hockey. And, you know, I do think Kyle Dubas, like we were talking earlier about all he's already invested in this team. I mean, I do think he has the guts and potentially like the foresight, if he sees that it's not going to happen, to pivot and make a U-turn. And he's so early in his tenure that, you know, he kind of has the latitude to kind of do that without getting, you know, ripped by too much, the media and fans too much, if he were to suddenly say, okay, wait, whoopsie, I made some mistakes. But there's just that human element in play as well. So there's a lot to consider beyond just like, hey, how many picks or prospects would it would take? It's more so like, what's next, deciding what happens with Jake Guentzel, because they do decide to trade him for futures. You know, I've never thought that Sidney Crosby would leave the Penguins, and this is just me kind of reading the situation, not that I have inside knowledge of what Sid is thinking or would do, but I've never once considered that Sid would actually leave the Penguins. But if they went into a rebuild right now with him playing as well as he is and the fact that he probably wants to play for another 5 years, you know, I really would start to wonder if we could see him finish career elsewhere.
Right. It's certainly a worthwhile talking point, just as you mentioned, how well he's played here in the age 36 season, just the nature of his contract status, as well as the guys around him, right? I mean, Evgeny Malkin talking a little bit in Arizona about his level of play, how he's kind of been an up-and-down player. It's not like this roster in general is getting younger, right? So I think that's certainly a worthwhile point to make with regards to the Guentzel conversations. So to me, I view it as, yeah, I'm kind of in the same camp as you. I'd be really surprised if they traded him. But you mentioned kind of the hockey trade idea of if you could trade him off and get players who help in the immediate future. Just go on that line. What would be something that makes sense to you? And I guess that's maybe more of just a larger topic of, hey, what are some parts that the Penguins need on this roster right now? Because obviously it's a little bit flawed, right? This is a team that's not leading the Eastern Conference, far from it. If they were to make a trade, for instance, that involves Jake, and they're getting guys back who help this team in the immediate future right now, what would that kind of a trade theoretically look like? Or who would be some players you'd look to?
Well,
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
You'd have to get another, you know, a winger back who could play with Sidney Crosby or play in the top six plus something else. You know, so I don't know exactly what that would look like. You know, I think we're going to address some of their other, you know, kind of short-term needs. But, yeah, I mean, the thought was is just at minimum getting another guy to plug in for Jake if you don't think you can re-sign him or you don't want to re-sign him, somebody who could try to replace what he brings to the table. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to think that they could get a player who could have more impact over the next, you know, 2-3 years than Jake. I mean, you know, we did have the James Neal for Patrick Hornquist trade a few years back, which – you know, people probably, I think a lot of people thought that the Penguins lost that trade initially because they didn't know what Hornquist would bring to the table. And it turns out to be a masterstroke by Jim Rutherford. So maybe, but I just think it's going to be hard for them to get a player who brings more value over the next 2 or 3 years than Jake Guentzel. Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I think an important thing we should talk about too is like the financial component. I know a lot of people are saying like, okay, like, because William Nylander in Toronto got $11 million a year, that's like what Jake wants or he's going to get on the market. I don't get the sense, at least from what I can tell, that money is going to be the biggest thing for Jake Guentzel. Like, I don't think he's like, okay, I need to be shown respect. I need to, you know, get eight figures on this salary. I just don't think that's the way he's wired. He wants to stay in Pittsburgh. He loves playing for the Penguins. I think he also would look at like the concessions that Sidney Crosby has made financially. Look at what Malkin and Letang took in terms of their AAV. So I do think he will look at that, and I don't know. I don't know what the right number is. This is just me kind of guessing, but I don't know. It could be 6 years times $8 million, and you're haggling over the no trade protection or no movement protection in the second half of the year. I just don't see this as something where Jake's like looking to break the bank. So, you know, we'll see what happens when Kyle and Ben Hankinson actually do talk to see if there's middle ground that they can bridge. But, you know, I don't expect Jake to be asking for something unreasonable from the Penguins. I think he wants to stay and would probably be willing to make some concessions, just like so many of his longtime teammates have.
And those figures that you mentioned, certainly at this point in his career, just given the extension that he did sign in the first place, which was such a team-friendly deal, I know that's led some people to say, oh, well, this will be one that maybe the Penguins or another team would overpay for, but kind of see it the same way as you, that I don't really have that expectation. That's not something I look at. I guess kind of asking you, just given your experience on this beat and with interacting with this team and Jake, what would be your expectation in terms of, let's say, the Penguins are going to go down the road of extending Jake. Is that something that we anticipate would happen during the season, like a William Nylander, where it happens, you know, maybe this transpires right after the trade deadline or sometime beforehand? Or do you think this is something that they're going to let play out, readdress over the summertime, and take their chances with Ben Hankinson and with Jake just come summertime and hope that this is something they can figure out at that point?
Yeah, I don't have an answer to that. I mean, you know, they haven't really engaged in serious talks recently, so it's hard to know where things would go once they did talk. But, you know, I think it's possible that they could get something done now. Like if they sit down here in 2 weeks at the All-Star break and, you know, they realize that they're not that far off, maybe they hammer something out. I do think there's some urgency to get it done by the deadline, and that's sort of maybe what Ben Hankinson was alluding to and a couple of weeks ago when he made those comments on SiriusXM that kind of got this whole had this whole thing kind of explode and become a national thing where Jake's on trade bait boards and stuff like that. So there is urgency with the deadline, but I also think, I don't know. I mean, some people have said, and I understand the thought process, like you can't, you know, let Jake walk for nothing. And if they don't have a deal done, they have to trade him regardless. I don't necessarily think that that's the way the Penguins will act. I mean, if they're, you know, in playoff position and they're going for it and they don't get a deal done with Jake, but they feel, you know, pretty good about the kind of discussions they had, I could see them doing it after the season. Kyle said as much and just say, okay, like we feel confident in what we know about what the player wants that, you know, we think we could potentially get there. So I don't think it's like a, you know, a drop dead serious or a drop dead scenario where they're just like, okay, you know, once the deadline comes, either he signs on the dotted line or he's gone. I just don't think that's how they're going to go about this.
Lots of discussions here on Jake Guentzel with the trade talk. There's a lot of other guys that we want to get into, though, I know. But there's not too many guys that are on expiring contracts the way that Jake is. Certainly a couple other players that come to mind, though. We've talked about them before on this podcast, one more so than the other, in Alex Nedeljkovic, just given the contract he's on and the performances he's turned in. We can open up this conversation to other players who have longer term on their deals, but who are some other players that come to mind maybe that Penguins fans should have their attention on when it comes to these trade talks as we get closer to the March 8th deadline of guys who could be leaving Pittsburgh or at least we could be involved in those kinds of conversations?
Yeah, I mean, this is all assuming that they fall out of striking distance. I don't think they're going to sell regardless. I think the one to watch or maybe the one – that was the one I watched was Nedeljkovic. I mean, he's faded recently, you know, still a small sample. Wouldn't be surprised if he played tonight in Arizona, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy that if he, you know, kind of gets back to where he was a few weeks ago with his play, could potentially get the Penguins a little something as a rental, just from goalie needy teams. Yeah. Beyond that, I mean, Riley Smith, I mean, I think if they fall out of it and Riley Smith is healthy, you know, they might look to just kind of wave a white flag on that and look ahead to the future. you know, other names are Raquel or Rust. They all have some form of no move protection. And though you wonder if they fall completely out of it and they are looking to turn the page, could they turn around and shop 65? So again, I think it's going to be a moot point. I think the Penguins are going to hang around here. You know, even though they blew it in Vegas, the third game this season in which they led by multiple goals in the third period and they lost, you know, they still are. Before that, they were 10-3-3 in their previous 16. I think they're going to stick around in the playoff hunt over the next month, and it's going to be a question of whether it's worth buying. And I don't know if we're going to get there either. So, so there's so many things at play. I mean, that's why. That's why it's going to be an interesting next few weeks, because the Penguins could go in a few different directions here. And, you know, right now they don't know which way it's going to go. I mean, the team and what they do in the ice and what happens ahead of them in the standings is going to determine which path they take at the trade deadline in March.
So you mentioned those guys certainly, and that's in the scenario of if the Penguins go south. So let's say for the sake of the argument, things are going well, they remain in this playoff hunt, or at the very least, they stay status quo, right? Where you're kind of middling, hovering around that 8-9 spot in the Eastern Conference. What are the Penguins' biggest needs? What are some things, if they're looking to retool or add to the roster without having to sacrifice guys, and if that's giving up picks or whatever it may be, offloading a contract like a Jeff Carter in addition to a pick, theoretically?
Jeff Carter's not going anywhere. I mean, he's got full no movement clause, and he doesn't want to go, and I don't know. He's actually playing all right. So, I mean, I'm sure he, you know, it'd be one thing. I mean, we talked a couple months ago when he was a healthy scratch, like if his play declined to the point where he just was like, man, I don't want to go out like this. But he's playing all right. And, he's got the full no move. So, I mean, and that's the thing too. Like, so in terms of their biggest needs, we'll start there. It's the usual with this team. They need, depth defensemen. I think you could advocate for them getting a lefty or a righty or both, and also, you know, a scorer in the bottom six. I mean, the bottom six has played actually pretty well recently. They don't score a lot of goals, but they don't give up a lot of goals. Lars Eller has been, you know, quietly their best third line center that they've had maybe since I've covered the team, and this is my sixth year. You know, Drew O'Connor was playing really well as a third liner. Now he's been elevated because of the Riley Smith injury. Achari has been as advertised, but they could use a score. I don't think that's like Jesse Puljujarvi. I mean, I think, you know, we'll get to the point eventually where he's signed and up in Pittsburgh, but, you know, I don't think that's a guy who has like a 20 goal season pace type player. So that's what they could always want. And yeah, the third pair, you know, the shuffling of Ryan Shea and Ludvig and P.O. Joseph and in and out of the lineup tells you how they feel about how those guys are playing. And obviously, you know, you can do better than Chad Ruedel. He's, you know, a steady 6-7 defenseman. But I think the bigger question is, like, realistically, what can they do? You know, unless they get rid of one of these big contracts, you know, they don't have a lot of cap space. They don't have a lot of future assets, and they don't really have any, you know, quote unquote, like matching salaries to send out to get a player. I mean, Carter would be the one, you know, in terms of a $3+ million contract that they could actually do something with. But, you know, as I said, you know, he's not going to approve a trade somewhere else. So, yeah, it's going to be difficult. Like, if they do want to buy, I just don't know how much ability they're going to have to actually do something significant because they're so tied up against the cap.
Given all that, what you mentioned with being so tight up against the cap, and I kind of want to hone in on that defenseman talk, just what you're mentioning there, as well as the nature of the team, right? The hope going into the year was that Ryan Graves would be a guy who could really cement himself as a top four defenseman. And that very well may be the case. And what they rely on here is they continue him playing those kinds of minutes, relying on him to play those kinds of minutes. So I guess I bring all that up to say, would the expectation be more likely that going into the trade deadline, if they were to add to the defense core, would it be a move like last year where you get a Dmitry Kulikov and it's you're giving up a marginal asset for a sixth defenseman, a seventh defenseman, fifth defenseman, whatever it is? Is that more likely and obviously easier, but is that more likely than, say, the Penguins go, hey, we're going to get a top four defenseman before the deadline?
How can they get a top four defenseman? They don't have the cap space. I mean, No, we're talking about just getting a player or maybe two that can hopefully give a little bit better results on the third pair. You know, on the right side, you have Letang and Carlson playing so much that it doesn't feel like a big need. But if one of them gets hurt, suddenly you got a big problem on the right side. So, yeah, I don't see them looking for like big fish. I don't think they can reel in a big fish unless they trade one of their current big fish. It's more so, yeah, like last year with Kulikov, like let's give up a fourth round pick or whatever to try to, you know, upgrade on our third pair.
Yeah. So in summary, this is going to be a super exciting deadline. They're going to get the biggest names in hockey and this team's winning the cup. That's basically the takeaway, right?
Well, as we just said, it could go a lot of different directions. We could have a really busy trade deadline here based on how things play out. You know, and I don't know. I mean, you don't see a lot of the quote-unquote hockey trades at the trade deadline or in season. You know, usually see the player-for-player trades in the off season. But, I mean, that's the one – that's like kind of like the one thing here that you wonder about that might come out of nowhere where they say, okay, like, we're going to trade, I don't know, just hypothetically, like Ricard Raquel. You know, we're going to trade this guy who makes $5, $6 million a year for, you know, a forward and a defenseman, like something like that. Or just swap a guy out for a similarly priced player who just brings a different element to the table. I mean, that's kind of the X factor where maybe something like that happens. But you just don't see it very often in season. Those usually off-season type moves.
It's really, I mean, these next 2 weeks, and Dubas said as much a while back about how important right at that All-Star break things would be. Certainly a lot of things to monitor that we're going to keep tabs on just in terms of the direction of the team, contract talks with Gensel. These next 2 weeks, I mean, not to use an old adage, but the team's going to kind of show us what they are, it feels like, these next few weeks determining the course of the Penguins. Certainly a lot that we discussed there.
Yeah, I mean, if this is where they're at, they're just still hovering around the final playoff spot. Like, they could just do nothing or make, like, one or two little minor tweaks. Like, they have to be worth further investment. And I don't know that this team, you know, in terms of trade acquisitions, I don't know if this team has showed enough. Them keeping Jake or not is a different story.
Yeah. Well, we'll be keeping tabs on all of that, but I think it's time for us to segue as we wrap this podcast up to our usual ending, which, of course, is our stick taps. You want to lead us off here, Matt, or how do you want to play it here?
You go first.
Gotcha. I'll lead it off and just say we're going to keep up with the Jake Gensel talk and say that this is a guy who's had another 20-goal season, just given what we're talking about, all the noise on the outside, as we've mentioned on this podcast before, the injury. There is just a lot going on with his season, and he's stayed steady. A guy who is one of the few players that earned an A with your report card, of course, last week with the midseason grades. Just can't say enough about the season that Gensel has put together. So stick taps to him on hitting the 20-goal plateau with the score against Vegas.
That's a worthy one. Mine's going to go to Chris Letang. I wrote about him for today's newspaper, if we had a newspaper, the fake newspaper. We have a website as well, stories on there. But yeah, I mean, Chris Letang has bounced back from a nightmare season last year, and he's back playing more like the guy we saw the previous two seasons, where he finished top 10 in Norris Trophy voting. You know, Mike Sullivan had an interesting comment, just because he's so calculated in the media. But you know, there's a lot of kind of debate about on the social medias about, you know, Carlson or Letang. I know Carlson's a media darling, and you know, fans kind of pick on Letang, but Sullivan came right out and said, you know, Chris has been our best defenseman. So I thought that was interesting to hear him kind of give Chris that endorsement, because Mike's usually pretty calculated with that. But I would agree with them. I mean, Carlson's been good, not great. Patterson's been a great story, but Chris has been really good. Big help for the PK. His numbers at 5-on-5 are better. He has basically the same amount of points as Carlson, despite playing like 3 minutes less per game of power play time. So, yeah, it's a great story. Not surprised that he bounced back the way he did. I mean, this guy always gets up off the mat. That's who he is. That's why he won the Masterton. But still, you never know. You never know after a rough season if the guy's going to be able to come back. But, you know, sure enough, he did. And, you know, you could argue he's been one of the Penguins' top three, four players this year.
I can't believe he didn't give you credit for being the reason he's had such a good season. I mean, you worked out with him. That's a natural connection, though.
He didn't agree. He laughed, but no. He said that me visiting him to work out in Montreal with him was not why he had the bounce back season, just in case anyone was wondering.
I'm still going to stick to it. That's my story, but whatever. Chris can have his, but either way, yeah, give that story from Matt a check, or check it out on post-gazette.com as well as all the rest of our Penguins content. Appreciate you guys tuning in for our podcast. As always, keep up with our Penguins weekly coverage there on the website, and we'll catch you guys again next week.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.